kinds of sweetness that are not possessed by any form, other form of Godhead. One is his all-attractive flute playing. Especially Vamshivata Tatastitaha. Karshan Venushanaya Gopi, or with that flute he's attracting the gopis. Beside that, you know, the flute is a manifestation of Krishna's all-attractiveness. And Krishna is attracted, on the other hand, by the pure love of his devotees. Well, I made the translation. The word is rupika. It's manifesting the form. It's the embodiment of his prema. It's the personal manifestation of the love itself. But I wouldn't take it too literally. There are many manifestations of Krishna's loving reciprocation with his devotees. The flute's not the only one. Not that we should worship Krishna's flute only and forget everything else. Get rid of all the other deities, we'll just put the flute on the altar. It's not what's recommended. The flute is one of the udipikas. One of the stimuluses for remembering Krishna, but it's not the only one. And it looks like the contact between Krishna's fingernails and the flute, that's the origin of Chandravali. The scriptures say that Chandravali appears from the contact of Sri Krishna's moon-like fingers. That must be the contact of his fingers with the flute. Okay, anyway, this is above my head. Over-eager to continue serving the two of them, I, Kalindi, have assumed a different form and have joined the company of Rukmini and the other queens, because originally she was Jamuna, and then she later became a queen. Thus you see me here. Actually, you are never, all you queens, you are never completely separated from Krishna, but you are not aware of this, and so are experiencing distress. Similarly, in this same place, the gopis also earlier experienced a mere semblance of pain and separation when Akrura came here. This pain was remedied by Uddhava. If you, good women, were to meet the same Uddhava here, then you would surely achieve eternal enjoyment with your beloved. Uddhava was sent by Krishna to Vrindavan to relieve the distress that was caused by Akrura's taking Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. Uddhava can also relieve the distress of the queens. How? That's going to be explained next. Sri Suta Uvacha.
It's
not really painful. Does Krishna go out of his way to cause pain to his devotees? Why should somebody want to be Krishna's devotee then? But it only appears to be pain. It really looks like pain. It looks like a total disaster. But it's the most desirable condition. I mean, neophytes will read about this and be scared away. But advanced devotees understand that this is actually the most desirable condition. If you good women were to meet the same Uddhava here, then you could surely achieve eternal enjoyment with your beloved. Sri Suta said, thus addressed, Krishna's wives inquired from the placid Kalindi. They were eager to gain the association of their dearmost by meeting Uddhava. Sri Krishna's wife said, O friend, you are most fortunate to not be feeling deprived of your beloved. Because your life is so successful, we want to be your maidservants. So this is Vaishnav consciousness, not to feel envious. That matsarya is defined as inability to tolerate another person's good fortune. But a Vaishnav, advanced Vaishnav, is pleased to see someone more fortunate than himself and wants to serve the more advanced person. Anyway, the queens say, but if we could only find Uddhava, everything we desire would be achieved. So please tell us, dear Kalindi, how we can meet him. So where are they going to find Uddhava? They have to go to Bhadrakashram? Sri Suta said, told this, Kalindi, the embodiment of Krishna's 16th part, answered them. The 16 principal queens represent the, Krishna is the moon, and the principal queens are the 16 phases of the moon. Kalindi said, Bhadrakashram, was assigned by Krishna as he was departed to be the place for his minister's spiritual practice, for Uddhava. There Uddhava is present in his manifest form, teaching spiritual wisdom to the world. But earlier, Krishna gave him Rajabhumi, with all its secrets, as the land of his perfection. Uddhava's place of sadhana is Bhadrakashram, but his place of achieving the perfection, that's Vrindavan. As this perfection remains hidden here, so even now, Uddhava is present here, unseen. At the Gopi's place, near Govardhan Hill, Uddhava is indeed present in the form of sprouting plants and creepers, eager to obtain dust touched by the gopis. Lord Hari has blessed him that he will always appear as the festival. Remember, Uddhava means festival. Lord Krishna blessed him that he will always appear as the festival of his own glories. Therefore, you should go for some time to the neighborhood of the Kusuma Lake and take Vajra along with you. Anybody who hasn't been there? Everyone who's been there? So, Kusuma Sarovar is 3 kilometers north of Govardhan town. North of Manasi Ganga. There the gopis every day at noon collect flowers. Not noon, 10:30? Yeah, and then they go to worship Suryadev, north of Radhakund, right? Then Suryakund. Okay, but the gopis are there every day. It's one of Krishna's favorite places. In the back of Kusuma Sarovara is where Uddhava lives eternally. He prayed to take birth as a bush or a creeper, and so Krishna let him reside eternally in the bushes and creepers behind Kusuma Sarovara. There are currently 2 places that contend to be the actual spot where Uddhava is residing. One is Uddhava Kund on the other side, behind, on the other side of the Pratikram Mark. There's a lake there, a pond. And then hidden behind Kusuma Sarovara is a small courtyard and temple, Uddhava Beta. So both say that this is where Uddhava resides, and also there's some bushes on the side. Uddhava's in that area. Invisible, residing, he's present in the form of sprouting plants and creepers. Okay, so you go there and take Vajra along with you. Kalindi's advising her co-wives. Bring people. Now, Uddhava is Krishna's festival personified, so you have to have a festival. Bring people who are devoted to Hari and begin a festival of music on veenas, flutes, and mridangas, of kirtan, poetry, and devotional songs. There, as you perform the festival, you will surely catch sight of Uddhava. He will certainly award the success you desire in your endeavors. Sri Shuka said, hearing this, the queens were very satisfied. They offered their respects to Kalindi and went to Vajra and Parikshit, whom they informed about this. When Vishnurata heard this, he was glad. He took the queens with him and went to that place, where without delay he carried out everything. In the Vrindavan forest, at the place of the gopis, not far from Govardhan, by the Kusuma lake, a festival of Krishna Sankirtan was begun. The kirtan was so splendid that the pastimes of the beloved of Vishubhanu's daughter seemed to appear directly. Everyone in the kirtan appeared like direct participants in those pastimes. Then, as everyone watched, Uddhava came out of a grove of grass, bushes, and creepers. He wore a flower garland, had a dark blue complexion, and wore a yellow garment. Wearing also a necklace of gunja berries, he was constantly singing about the darling of the cowherd girls. With his arrival, the Sankirtan festival reached a peak of splendor. He glowed like a jewel embedded in a crystal tower, caught in the rays of the moon. They all then became submerged in an ocean of joy and forgot everything else. After a moment, they regained their external awareness. Seeing that Uddhava's appearance was exactly like Sri Krishna's, they worshipped him. They thought that now their cherished desire was fulfilled. Chapter 3. Sri Suta said, then, seeing all of them absorbed in Krishna Kirtan, Uddhava offered them his respects. He embraced Parikshit and addressed him. Uddhava said, O King, you are most fortunate. You are always full in exclusive devotion to Krishna. Indeed, your mind is merged completely in this festival of Krishna Sankirtana. By the favor of fortune, you have inspired pure love in Krishna's wives and in Vajra. This befits you, dear boy. The beauty and strength of your body was granted by Krishna himself. Parikshit was attacked by Ashwatthama in the womb. It's explained that actually the Brahmastra weapon killed the unborn child. But Krishna entered the womb and brought him back to life. So literally, his bodily strength and beauty was given to him by Krishna. Among all the inhabitants of Dwarka, these queens are without doubt the most fortunate. The Lord ordered Arjuna to settle them in Vraja, the moon of Sri Krishna's mind. Enriched by the radiance of Sri Radha's face, shines forever, adorning with its moonbeam this forest of his pastimes. The moon of Krishna is always full. It has 16 phases, whose brilliant light, divided into thousands of rays, is now present in the form of her non-different expansions. In other words, the queens are all expansions of Srimati Radharani. Krishna is the original moon, so they're the 16 phases and the countless rays of the moon. O King of Kings, in the same way that shatterer of his followers' fear, lightning like Vajra, is present in his place by the right side of Sri Krishna's lotus feet. In this descent, Krishna has empowered his yoga maya to show her full force. Doubtlessly, it is by her influence that these devotees have forgotten themselves and are suffering in anxiety. It's only by the influence of yoga maya, the illusion created by the yoga maya, that the devotees of Vrindavan appear to be suffering. They think they're suffering. Unless Krishna becomes visible to them, none of them will regain their proper consciousness. But Maya has now covered the vision of the jivas from ever seeing Krishna again. At the end of the 28th Dwarpa Yuga, when Krishna himself sends forth his bewildering potency, he then becomes visible. That time, however, is now finished, and we have entered a different age. But listen, and I will tell you another way that he can become visible. Okay. Uddhava just said that Krishna can't be visible, seen again. But he said one way. You're looking in the book, but if you don't, anybody who's not looking can tell me what that way is. That is Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it's supposed to be Bhagavat Mahatma, so getting on the Bhagavatam somehow. Wherever and whenever devotees of Bhagavatam recite and listen to the scripture Srimad Bhagavatam, there for certain Sri Krishna is present. Thank you. Wherever a single verse or even a half a verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is heard, the personality of Godhead Krishna shines forth along with the gopis. Those who have taken a human birth in the land of Bharata but have not heard the Bhagavatam are slaves of sin and commit spiritual suicide. You may have seen that. The fathers, mothers, wives, and the whole family lines of those who regularly serve the scripture Srimad Bhagavatam are all easily delivered from material existence. This is Uddhava telling us this. On the strength of Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahmanas develop wisdom, kings conquer their enemies, Vaishyas gain wealth, and Shudras become healthy. Women and others obtain everything they desire. Thus, what fortunate person would fail to regularly serve the Bhagavatam? As the perfection of many lifetimes, one may obtain Srimad Bhagavatam. In it, the revelation of devotion to the Supreme Lord is born. So now we've gotten the hint, or the secret has been revealed, where Uddhava is present, invisibly, at Kusuma Sarovara. Next secret is, what was Uddhava's sadhana? How did he become? How did he become Krishna's confidential associate? The sadhana that made Uddhava perfect. Of course, he's an eternal associate, but he went to the pastime of practicing his sadhana. Next, I'll tell you. In the past, Brihaspati received Srimad Bhagavatam by the grace of Sankhyayana. And Brihaspati gave it to me. Because of this, I have become dear to Krishna. Because he studied Srimad Bhagavatam. That was a sadhana, that's all. That was this. That's it. That's all that Uddhava did to become Krishna's dear devotee. He studied from his guru. He studied Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. These are material benefits.
Yeah.
Pabla Shruti. Because Bhagavatam is for everybody. You know, if you have some material motive, okay, no problem. Bhagavatam will give you what you want. It's ultimately it's really properly for the Nirmatsara Paramahamsas. But even those who are Samatsara and are far from Paramahamsas, they can get whatever they want from the Bhagavatam. Yes. And the way they should worship Krishna is through his holy name and Srimad Bhagavatam. Or, you know, the five main angas of devotional service recommended by Rupa Goswami is the most potent. Those are two of them. Associate with devotees, worship the deity with affection, and reside in Mathura Mandala. These five things. Two of them one of them is, of the five, is study Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of Rasika Bhaktas. Yes. Yeah, he's not a dry scholar. And Prabhupada is giving us the association of Jiva Goswami, Vishnu Chakravarti. So, Okay. Now hear from me, Vishnu Ratha Burchett, a narration that Brihaspati told me. From this account, you can understand the disciplic succession of this Vedic text, the Bhagavatam. Sri Brihaspati said, when Krishna, assuming the form of the Lord of Maya, the Purusha, glanced at her, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva appeared, along with the modes of passion, goodness, and ignorance. These three persons rose up, and the Lord assigned them their responsibilities to work for generation, protection, and destruction. Brahma then took another birth from the lotus growing from the Lord's navel and inquired from the Lord. Brahma took 1, 2, 3 births that I know of. Because when the Lord glanced at Prakriti, the Mahatattva appeared. Mahatattva is a material body, subtle body of the whole universe. But there is no material body created unless there's a jiva who wants to be the proprietor of that body. Maya doesn't create bodies when there's nobody who wants them. Just like contractors who are building a development of houses. If they're economical, they won't build the houses unless someone's ready to buy them. They'll build them as people order them. Like that, when there's an order, when there's a request for a material body, then Maya provides one. So whose body is the Mahatattva? Brahma. The elements, beginning with Mahatattva, each have their presiding deities. But what we have now is a situation where there are multiple universes. Originally, there's only one Mahatattva. Brahma, the original Brahma, is the presiding deity of Mahatattva. But then Garbhadakshay Vishnu, the second Purusha, expands into countless universes. And then in each one of those universes, there's Brahma and all the demigods, a separate set in each universe. So there's an original prototype Brahma, and then there's a separate Brahma in each universe. Who or what that original Brahma is, and those other presiding deities, the elements, I can't tell you. You know, it's not specified in the Bhagavatam, at least, whether he's a jiva or something else. Okay, the original demigods in the Mahatattva. Anyway, there's one Brahma in the Mahatattva, and there's millions of Brahmas in each one of the universes. So there's two births. The birth in the Mahatattva, then the birth within the universe, in the universal form. Again, the universal form is a material body, the Virat Rupa. We think of it as Vishnu's body, but actually the jiva who inhabits that body is again Brahma. The individual Brahma in each universe, he takes birth first as the proprietor, the jiva who considers the Virat Rupa, the universal form, to be his body. And the Paramatma, the super soul in that universal form, that's Garbhadakshay Vishnu. So it's the body of Vishnu only in the Virat Rupa is the body of Vishnu only in the sense that Vishnu is actually the super soul of that body. Brahma is the jiva. And then Brahma's third birth, from that Virat Rupa grows the lotus stem, a flower on top of that, and Brahma takes birth on the lotus flower. That's his third birth. So that's what's being mentioned here. Brahma then took another birth. This is Brihaspati telling this to Uddhava, Uddhava retelling it now. Brahma then took another birth from the lotus growing from the Lord's navel. And he inquired from the Lord. Sri Brahma said, O Narayan, original person, supreme soul, obeisances to you. You have engaged me in creating. By remembrance of you, and by your mercy, O Master, may the sinful mode of passion not obstruct me. Sri Brihaspati said, when at that time, long ago, the personality of Godhead taught him Srimad Bhagavatam. So Lord Narayan responded to Brahma's request for protection from illusion by teaching him Srimad Bhagavatam. And he told him, "Dear Brahma, serve the scripture to achieve your perfection." Most pleased, Brahma took the Bhagavatam and instituted the constant performance of seven-day recital for achieving Krishna and destroying the seven coverings of material existence. Yeah, that's the origin. That's the original Bhagavad Saptaha. Okay. But that's only one version of reciting Bhagavatam. That's how Brahma recites it. Yes.
Sorry to disturb. I have a question.
Yes.
You said Brahma takes two births. Is it the same individual or they're all different persons?
They can't all be the same person. Same, you mean same person?
Yeah.
Well, it can't be the same, at least because the first birth is only one Brahma. Then inside each universe there's separate Brahmas. So, and they're usually jivas. So you can't have one jiva split up into a million jivas. That doesn't happen. So it can't all be the same person. The second and the third birth are the same person. Brahma takes birth, his body is the universal form. Then he takes birth again on the lotus flower. That is two different births of the same person. Attaining all his desires by observing the seven-day recital of Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahma expands the creation regularly, week after week, again and again, because that's a week of Brahma. Vishnu also prayed. This is Vishnu, the Guna avatar. He is God. He is God himself, but he's an expansion, so therefore he's playing the role of needing to perform some sadhana. It's just his pastime. He's praying to Lord Mahavishnu, from whom he expanded. Vishnu also prayed to the Supreme Person for achieving his personal goal, since the Lord had appointed him to maintain those who are born into the universe. Sri Vishnu said, "O Lord, as is fit, I am going to protect the universe's progeny by the paths of fruitive work and renunciation motivated by the goals of good karma and knowledge. Whenever in the course of time the principles of religion will decline, I will re-establish Dharma by various incarnations. I will bestow the sure fruits of sacrifice and other works to those who hanker for sense gratification, and the five kinds of liberation to the renunciants who desire them. But how can I maintain those who do not even want liberation? How will I maintain myself and the goddess Shri? Please tell me." To Vishnu also, the original person taught Srimad Bhagavatam. He told him, "Study the scripture to achieve all your goals." Then Vishnu, satisfied in his heart, became competent to maintain the living beings for their ultimate success. In the company of Shri, of Goddess Shri, he remembered it, the Bhagavatam, month after month. So, okay. When Vishnu himself is the speaker, and Lakshmi is intent on listening, the hearing of the Bhagavatam goes on repeatedly, completed each time in 1 month. It's 1 month of Vishnu. When Lakshmi herself is the speaker, and Vishnu is eager to hear, the relishing of the book takes 2 months. Then it is especially wonderful. Lakshmi speaks it to Vishnu every 2 months. When Vishnu can properly assume his responsibility, Lakshmi's mind becomes free from worry. Thus she is seen constantly relishing the Bhagavatam. Then Rudra, appointed to the task of destruction, also prayed to the Supreme Lord to increase his ability to do his duty. Sri Rudra said, O Lord of Lords, my master, I possess the powers for constant and occasional destruction. I lack the power, however, for ultimate destruction." Ultimate destruction is liberation. Liberation. Yeah. Atyanta pralaya. Described in the 11th canto, chapter 4, four kinds of annihilation. There's constant annihilation, That's the constant decay of all things. There is partial annihilation at the end of Brahma's day, complete annihilation at the end, universal annihilation at the end of the of Brahma's life, and then ultimate ultimate annihilation is the individual jiva's liberation. Sri Brihaspati said, Lord Narayan also gave Rudra Srimad Bhagavatam. By serving it, he conquered the mode of ignorance. Lord Sadashiva observed the recitation of the Bhagavatam in the course of 1 year, and then he obtained the power for ultimate destruction. Yes? Yes. That's it. They have different methods. Brahma recites the Bhagavatam, the whole Bhagavatam in a month. Brahma in 7 days. Vishnu in 1 month. Lakshmi in 2 months. And Rudra takes a year to recite the whole Bhagavatam. So these are alternate methods for studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Because we take one verse at a time, 7 to 9 years, to finish the whole Bhagavatam. Well, anyway, it's their own relative time.
Yeah.
So in their own time frame, you know, to recite the Bhagavatam in 1 year, you have to recite 9 or 10 verses a day. Whatever it is. You know, you have to recite several verses a day. If you're going to do it in 7 days, you've got to do several chapters a day. You know, or even more than a canto every day. Okay. Uddhava said, Hearing this narration from my guru in glorification of Srimad Bhagavatam and obtaining the Bhagavatam from him, you have to obtain the Bhagavatam from your guru. You can't just pick up the book on your own. Really, it's by the blessings of one's spiritual master that one is able to enter into the understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam. And obtaining the Bhagavatam from him, I became joyful and bowed down to him. Thereafter, I accepted the Vaishnav custom of relishing Srimad Bhagavatam in 1 month and observed the custom correctly. In that course of 1 month, I became a dear friend of Krishna's. By studying the Bhagavatam once, in the course of a month, Uddhava became perfect and became Krishna's constant companion. That was the sadhana. Krishna engaged me in visiting his beloved girlfriends in Vraja. He, who was always enjoying with the gopis, personally sent the message of Srimad Bhagavatam through my mouth. Receiving this message according to their understanding, the gopis became freed from the pain of separation. I could not understand the mystery of this, but I saw the surprise they exhibited. After Brahma and the other demigods prayed to Krishna that he return to his residence in the spiritual sky, and after they departed, Krishna personally bestowed this mystery on me through the medium of Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, when Uddhava was sent to Vrindavan, the message that Krishna gave him was actually the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, but Uddhava didn't really understand what he was saying. When Krishna spoke the Uddhava Gita to him, just before Krishna's departure, then Krishna fully informed Uddhava, you know, gave him the power to understand the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna personally bestowed this mystery on me through the medium of Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, the confidential mystery of you know, the intimate association between Krishna and his most closest devotees. That was Uddhava got his inspiration from seeing the gopis and hearing from them. But the complete understanding of it all was given to him directly by Krishna when Krishna spoke his instructions that are recorded in the 11th canto. Uddhava received Srimad Bhagavatam from his guru, Brihaspati. He recited it. By studying Srimad Bhagavatam for a month, he became Krishna's associate. But the deepest understanding of the Bhavatam was given to him, the complete understanding was given to him by Krishna himself just before Krishna's departure. He perfectly imparted this knowledge to me while sitting at the base of a banyan tree. Thus now I dwell among the creepers of Raja, even after having gone to Bhadragashram. Therefore I live here always as I desire, at Narada Kunda. Narada Kunda is about a kilometer closer to Govardhan. It's very close to, or not, half a kilometer. Yeah, it's 350 meters, 400 meters down the street. Okay. Krishna reveals himself to his devotees through Srimad Bhagavatam. So to achieve the purposes of these devotees, I am going to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, Uddhava says, I'm going to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to you. Vajra, and the queens of Krishna. You should help me in this. He's asking Pariksit for his help. Sri Suta said, hearing this, Vishnurata bowed down to Uddhava and spoke. Sri Pariksit said, O Haridas, please recite Srimad Bhagavatam. I am ready to carry out your order in whatever you need me for. I am ready to help you do this. Sri Suta said, hearing this, Uddhava felt pleased and spoke the following words. So Pariksit's happy that Uddhava is going to speak the Bhagavatam, and he's being asked to assist. So I'm very eager to participate in this recital. Uddhava said, now that Sri Krishna has abandoned the earth, Kali will become a strong force on its surface. He will create great disturbances as unwanted population increases. Therefore, please go and conquer all the directions and subdue Kali. Meanwhile, I will observe the one-month Vaishnav custom. Okay, so he's telling Pariksit, you have to go somewhere else. That's how you're going to help. I will thus disseminate the relishing of Srimad Bhagavatam with your help. I will help these devotees attain the eternal abode of the enemy of Madhu. This is a cause of disappointment that he's being asked to go away. Sri Suta said, hearing these words, the king became happy and also anxious. He revealed his mind to Uddhava. Sri Pariksit said, obeying your command, I will certainly subdue Kali. So it was Uddhava who ordered Pariksit to go defeat Kali. But how will I obtain Srimad Bhagavatam? You should be more merciful to me, because I have also taken shelter at your feet. Sri Suta said, hearing the statement, Uddhava responded. Uddhava said, O king, you should not worry at all for any reason. You are the most qualified person to hear the scripture Bhagavatam. Time has so advanced that now most humans, addicted to material work, have not even heard of the Bhagavatam Shruti. By your grace, many humans in the land of Bharata will obtain Srimad Bhagavatam and thus achieve perpetual happiness. The great, powerful sage Sri Shuka is the very image of the son of Nanda. There is no doubt that he will recite the Bhagavatam to you. By this, O king, you will attain the eternal abode of the Lord of Raja. And thenceforth, Srimad Bhagavatam will be transmitted throughout the world. So please go, ruler of kings, and subdue Kali. Sri Suta said, told this, Pariksit circumambulated Uddhava and went off to conquer the directions. Vajra, meanwhile, designated Pratibahu to rule his kingdom, one of his sons. He remained in that place with his mothers, desiring to hear the Bhagavatam. This is at Kusuma Sarovara, or just behind it. Thus Uddhava conducted the relishing of Srimad Bhagavatam for 1 month in the Vrindavan forest near Govardhan. As this relishing went on, the pastimes of Hari revealed themselves all around in their transcendental form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Krishna also revealed himself. Everyone then saw themselves situated within him, and Vajra saw himself at the right side of Krishna's lotus feet. As Vajra became free from the bereavement of separation from Krishna, he and his mothers appeared splendid in that holy land, which exhibits for Krishna the nighttime of his Rasa-lila. They saw themselves as rays of the moon's effulgence and were astonished. Cured of the disease of separation from their beloved, they returned to their eternal abode. They and all others who belonged to Krishna's eternal pastimes suddenly disappeared from the sight of ordinary people. In the groves around Govardhan, among the cows in Vrindavan and other forests, they enjoy eternally with Krishna. Those who are fully dedicated to loving Krishna can see them. Sri Sutta said, Anyone who hears or chants about how these devotees obtain the personality of Godhead will also attain him and be relieved of all distress. Any questions? In chapter 4. The sages said, "Well spoken, Sutta. May you live long, and may you long instruct us. These glories of Srimad Bhagavatam we have heard from your mouth are unique. Please tell us just what the Bhagavatam is, its extent, and the method of studying it. And tell us now, Sutta, the qualifications of its speaker and hearer." Sri Sutta said, "The identities of Srimad Bhagavatam and Sri Bhagavan are always one and the same. They can be described as eternal knowledge and bliss. Know the Bhagavatam to be the text, which is full of revelations of Sri Krishna's sweetness for the benefit of the devotees who have attachment to him. Its words aim at describing the four topics of knowledge, realization, devotion, and the limbs of devotional practice. It very expertly subdues illusion. Know this to be the Srimad Bhagavatam. Who knows its extent? Indeed, its text goes on without limit. Lord Hari showed a small sample of it to Brahma in four verses. By diving into its infinity, dear Brahmins," this is Sutta speaking to the Shonaka and the other sages, "Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva become competent to fulfill their ambitions. For human beings, whose intelligence and other faculties are limited, Vyasa has recited the famous conversation between Parikshit and Shukadev." In other words, the Bhagavatam was actually unlimited. The Bhagavatam, as we know it, was arranged by Vyasadeva so that human beings could comprehend it. This is the book of 18,000 verses known as the Bhagavatam. It is the ultimate shelter for those who are in the grasp of the sea monster Kali. Now I will describe its hearers. Dedicated to the narrations of Sri Vishnu's glories, these hearers are considered to be of two kinds, superior and inferior. The superior hearers are the sparrow, swan, parrot, fish, and others. The inferior hearers are called the wolf, jackal, bull, camel, and others. One. Yes? Who can explain? He's going to define each one of these. Okay. One who ignores everything else and is only intent on hearing and listening to Krishna's scripture is a sparrow, like the sparrow intent on the water released from a cloud. The swan is he who takes the essence from various scriptures, as a swan extracts pure milk from water mixed with milk. By speaking little, only what is appropriate, the parrot pleases Vyasadeva. The hearers, the instructor, and the audience who are well engaged in reciting the scripture, just like an ordinary parrot. The eager hearer, who, while relishing the nectar, does not speak for even a moment, is like a fish in the ocean of milk. Okay, those are the five kinds of expert hearers. Now the inferior hearers. A fool who makes rude comments and gives trouble to the expert hearers is a wolf. Just like a wolf in the forest who disturbs the deer, engrossed in the beauty of a flute's song. A burunda. Wolf jackal. A burunda is a bird, yeah. Yeah, it's a kind of bird. A burunda teaches others without himself actually having heard and practiced. Like the burunda bird on the peak of the Himalayas. One who accepts everything he hears, blind to what is important or not important, is a bull. Like a bull who sees no difference between tasty grapes and dry oil cakes. These are the inferior speakers, hearers. He is a camel who rejects what is sweet and instead takes pleasure in the opposite. Like a camel who leaves aside a sweet mango and feeds himself with lemons. There are many other varieties of the two kinds of hearers, like the bee and the donkey. They can be understood by their different behaviors, born out of their different characters. One presents himself before the speaker. One who presents himself before the speaker with folded palms as a trusting disciple, who bows down as joined, avoids other talks, and is humble, very expert, and eager to hear, who is serious to give careful thought to what he hears, who likes to ask questions, who is pure and always affectionate to Krishna's devotees, is called by the speakers a proper hearer. Now the suitable speaker. One who thinks about the Supreme Lord, who doesn't have material concerns, who is a compassionate friend to the wretched, and is expert in explaining things in various ways, is honored by sages as a suitable speaker. Now hear, dear Brahman, of the rules for serving Srimad Bhagavatam in the land of Bharata. By following these rules, one will enjoy continuous happiness. There are four ways to serve Srimad Bhagavatam. These should be understood as service in the modes of passion, goodness, and ignorance, and transcendental service. Four modes in which you can serve Srimad Bhagavatam. When a busy endeavor, like a Vedic sacrifice, is made with fanfare for 7 days, with pomp and opulent worship, then the Bhagavatam is being served in the mode of passion. Hearing for a month or a whole season, with tasteful relishing and not too much endeavor, is in the mode of goodness. It promotes all varieties of ecstasy. Service is done in the mode of ignorance, when hearing is done over the course of a year, lazily, and without much faith, sometimes remembering what is heard and sometimes forgetting. But even this creates happiness. Yes? Not hard and fast rules, but it's, yeah. You know, if you take forever, space it out, you know, don't concentrate on what you're doing, then it's in the mode of ignorance. Service is done in the mode of ignorance when hearing is done over... Oh, I did that. But then, when the regulations are put aside of hearing for a year, a month, or some days, and when the Bhagavatam is served constantly with pure loving devotion, that is considered transcendental. So, best recommendation is study Bhagavatam constantly with love. It is said that the discussion between Parikshit and Shukadev, in that discussion, the Bhagavatam was served transcendentally. It is referred to as a 7-day recital only because that was how many days remained in Parikshit's life. It's not in the ordinary category of a 7-day recital because it was on the transcendental level. Otherwise, 7-day recital is which? That's in the mode of passion. Try to rush it like that and make a big sacrifice out of it. So the Bhagavad Saptas that are done nowadays at best, they're in the mode of passion. But when Parikshit spoke it, heard it in 7 days, that was different. That was transcendental. But whatever the situation, one should by all means, however one can and however one likes, serve the Bhagavatam, either in one of the three modes or in the transcendental mode. The Bhagavatam is the wealth of those who hanker only to taste the pleasure of worshipping Sri Krishna's pastimes, and those who have no aspiration even for liberation, but also for those who are tired of being tormented in material life and desire liberation. The scripture is the medicine for the disease of birth and death. In this Kali Yuga age, it should be served with all care, even for those who like sense gratification and have hopes to enjoy material life. This is the best means in Kali Yuga to achieve success in the path of fruitive work. This fruitive success is very hard to achieve because of lack of capacity, wealth, and practical knowledge. Therefore, such people should also honor the narration of Srimad Bhagavatam. Narration of the Bhagavatam bestows wealth, a wife, sons, vehicles, and other property, fame, residences, and unrivaled sovereignty. By the association of Srimad Bhagavatam, these persons can enjoy benefits in this world, whatever their hearts desire, and in the end go back to the abode of Sri Hari. Whenever anyone is serious about hearing the message of the Bhagavatam, those hearers should be served nicely with one's bodily faculties and one's wealth. If you meet somebody who is serious about hearing Bhagavatam, let's speak of a speaker. You meet somebody who is a serious hearer of Bhagavatam, you should worship him. You should offer your wealth and do service to him. By the favor of those hearers, the person who serves them will also be able to begin serving Srimad Bhagavatam. You serve someone who's hearing the Bhagavatam, you'll get attraction to hearing the Bhagavatam also. What we call wealth is anything separate from Sri Krishna. In other words, take your wealth, give it up, offer it to the devotees, and then you'll get the real transcendental benefit. There are two kinds of speakers and hearers: those who want Krishna and those who want wealth. In other words, anything other than Krishna. When the hearer is compatible with the speaker, then their happiness increases. If the two are of opposite natures, however, there will be an inappropriate mixture of tastes, and the endeavor will prove fruitless. But even in such cases, one who actually wants to attain Krishna will eventually succeed. In other words, it's recommended, let the materialist speakers speak to the materialist hearers. And the serious speakers serious hearers should hear from the serious speakers. They shouldn't mix. Yeah, even the materialists speaking to other materialists, if they're speaking Bhagavatam, there's great benefit. But the serious devotees shouldn't listen from the professional materialistic reciters. So we don't have to condemn all this, you know, materialistic chant, professional recitation of Bhagavatam. Let it go on. But we have nothing to do with it. It's a fiasco. I mean, there was one down the street from us, famous reciter came, and he advertised a big billboard that says, "Don't make any donations. We won't accept any money donations. But everybody please come. You know, I don't take any donations." So while he was reciting at Modi Bhavan, someone broke into his room and stole 40,000 rupees. While the Brahmin was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Although he claimed he didn't accept any donations, he somehow got ripped off of 40,000 rupees while he was talking. Anyway, if this process of hearing Bhagavatam is completed, he who desires wealth will gain all success. For the transcendentally situated person who desires Krishna, the only absolute injunction is pure love. One who has material desires is enjoined to execute the process to its completion. He should take bath, perform his daily rituals, and offer water at the feet of Lord Hari. He should worship the book and the spiritual master with regular offerings. Then, with pleasure, he should speak or hear Srimad Bhagavatam. He should observe silence and take milk or plain khichdi for his meals. He should maintain celibacy, sleep on the floor, and avoid anger, greed, and so on. Every day, the recital should finish with kirtan, and at the end, one should remain awake throughout the night. Now have kirtan, at the end of class.
Yeah, at the end of the class.
Yeah, because we usually run out for breakfast.
Yeah. At the end of class.
Yes?
Some. I think it's called, it's a very good system. It's called some path where you have at the beginning you have the
kirtan. Yes? Yes. But anyway, we're supposed to be remembering Krishna all day. You know, we have service to do, so it's so we can you know, put aside some of the regulations. But certainly, having heard the Bhagavatam at 8:30 in the morning, we should remember it the rest of the day, not forget everything we heard as soon as we walk out the door. Okay, one should feed the Brahmins and satisfy them with gifts of honor. Okay, so feeding the Brahmins, that's also after class. The spiritual master should be offered cloth, ornaments, and other items, including a cow. Having executed this prescribed procedure, one will achieve the desired result. He will gain a wife, a kingdom, money, or whatever he wants. But this hearing with material desires is not preferable. It's actually a pretentious show. In Kali Yuga, the scripture Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by the parrot Shukadev, is the means of obtaining Krishna. It bestows the fruit of eternal bliss in pure love. So this is another role that Uddhava has taken, the acharya in the disciplic succession of Srimad Bhagavatam. We're coming from the other disciplic succession through Shukadev, it was also spoken by Uddhava in 1 month to Vajranaba and the queens at Kusuma Sarovara. Yes?
Were you talking about different kinds of speakers and different kinds of hearers and how to hear a mixture is inappropriate, it doesn't bring the best result. And also in the third canto, Kapila Devi explains that although pure devotional service or devotional service to the pure, that those who involve themselves in this can be 81 different conglomerations of the mind.
Yes.
So is it inappropriate to be selective in who you hear Bhagavatam from?
Well, you know, one should associate with devotees who are Svatovare, Snigde, and Sajatiya. It's their kindness that devotees who are better than us even bother to associate with us. You know, strictly speaking, for their advancement, they should avoid the association of inferior persons, of materialistic persons, but they're risking our association, kindly giving us their association. That is the selflessness of a preacher. He puts aside what's from his own selfish interest, the best thing for himself, and serves just for the benefit of others. But strictly speaking, for your own self-interest, you should try to associate with people better than you, who are Snigdha and Sajatiya. Sajatiya means who belong to your own community. Like Jati means your caste. So our spiritual caste is our Sampradaya. We should hear Bhagavatam, and Snigdha means sympathetic. That means that a superior person wants to take the trouble to associate with me, an inferior person, because he feels compassion, sympathy. Maybe he doesn't. So I have to find the person, the superior person, who's willing to give me his association. Maybe he doesn't want to be bothered. That's one qualification. The other qualification, he should belong to the same group. Which for us means we should hear Bhagavatam from devotees who belong to ISKCON. We want to follow Prabhupada, follow his desires, and receive his instructions. We should therefore listen to the followers of Prabhupada. And not go outside to hear Bhagavatam. Yes? So it's over, ready? Somebody who's better than yourself. A person who's more advanced, that's all. Swato vare, swataha, then oneself, vara, better. It's vara. Yeah. Yeah, two words. Swata, swato, and vare. This is from the description given by Rupa Goswami in the early chapters of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Those are his words. So that's how we should discriminate. If we discriminate that I don't want to go to class today because I don't like this speaker, you know, he's not real good. He's not good, and he's got his own agenda, and you know, I don't want to hear it. That's okay. But as explained by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his Madhurya Kandambani, when he talks about two different kinds of nishtha, he first of all describes the different conditions of devotees who haven't achieved any nishtha. But then even nishtha develops in two phases. Nishtha, firm faith. There's conditional nishtha and unconditional. If I pick and choose, I discriminate. Krishna's prasadam, the kirtan, I like this kirtan, I don't like that kirtan. I like this prasadam, I don't like that prasadam. I like this Bhagavatam class, but I'll avoid the other one. That's conditional. That means your faith is there. Some faith is there, but it's weak. Someone who has strong faith wants to hear Bhagavatam, even if it's the worst class in the world. If the speaker says, repeats something that Prabhupada said, something that Shukadeva Goswami says correctly, that should be enough to send you into ecstasy, even if the rest of the class stinks. Same thing with prasadam. We should have such strong faith in prasadam that even badly prepared prasadam is a cause of, you have great faith in it. And kirtan. We're not interested in artistic performance, but in hearing Krishna's names, glorifying Krishna. If it satisfies Krishna, it should satisfy us. Yes. Yeah. He purposely arranged that it would be, you know, out of rhythm, bad harmony, everything. Mm-hmm. Yes?
What should we think of someone who is supposed to be traveling?
Well, I don't know, maybe it's some circumstance. Yeah. Maybe he can't come to class. But it doesn't look so good. If someone discriminates, it's a sign of weaker faith. If someone, you know, picks and chooses. If you really have strong attraction to Srimad Bhagavatam, you're eager to hear it, you want to hear it every day, you don't want to miss it. Sometimes you have to miss it. You know, if you have a service that you have to do at that time, you know, then you have to miss it. Yes? Yes.
Ultimately, Krishna Maharaj was defeated
by Kali.
So, what kind of consequences
did
this take place?
How does Krishna was defeated by Kali. Well, no, Kali was kept in check until Parikshit left. As long as Parikshit was alive, Kali could not conquer the earth. So, I wouldn't say. I mean, Parikshit is famous for having subdued Kali, not the other way around. So Parikshit did win, although he let Kali have some place in his kingdom. That's inevitable. You know, Kali Yuga began before Parikshit was even born. So it's his age, he owns it. It's Parikshit's great glory that he was able to at least subdue Kali. Nobody can undo the intention of the plan of the Supreme Lord and completely stop Kali. All the greatest sages in the universe assembled at Naimisharanya to do what they could to stop, to mitigate the effects of Kali Yuga. But they couldn't stop it. They tried to perform a 1,000-year Soma sacrifice. There is such a thing. Among the sacrifices, the Shruti sacrifices, the ones that are actually described in the Vedas, the big sacrifices, the potent sacrifices, are the Soma sacrifices. When the Soma juice is offered, then entrance into heaven is gained. And there are different kinds of Soma sacrifice. The simplest one can be done in one day. Or if you graduate to the second of the seven levels, there's a 3-day sacrifice, an 11-day sacrifice, a 1-month sacrifice. The seventh and longest kind of Soma sacrifice is 1,000-year Soma sacrifice. Rarely performed. The sages headed by Shonaka, who was very expert in these things, and all of them present were expert performers of sacrifice, they tried to perform a 1,000-year sacrifice to see if they could stop Kali Yuga. Apparently they couldn't even finish the sacrifice. Kali beat them. But they, because when you perform a Soma sacrifice that takes several days, you don't perform the sacrifice all day and all night. It goes on for some hours during the day, and then there's free time. And you're supposed to spend the time in the afternoon. What's the time for Puranas? From 4 o'clock? From about 4 o'clock for a couple of hours, time is taken for reciting Puranas. Sakshana Harehe. The sages tell Sutta, we're sitting here with time on our hands. Actually, it's the time of the day they're supposed to hear Puranas. After having done the rituals in the later afternoon, that's the time for hearing Puranas and epics while you're performing the sacrifice. So they invited, first of all, Ramaharshana was supposed to do that, but then he got killed by Balaram, and his son was appointed as his substitute. Ugrasravasuta was invited to speak, sit on the Vyasasana and speak the Puranas and epics. He spoke the Mahabharata first, then he spoke all the other Puranas, and last he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. So this Skanda Purana was somewhere in the middle. And then the last thing that Sutta Goswami spoke to the sages was Srimad Bhagavatam. That way, they became perfect. Because in the beginning, most of them were Karmakandis, and some of them were aspirants for liberation. Some of them were worshippers of Shiva and other demigods. They all became pure Vaishnavas after hearing all the Puranas recited by Sutta Goswami. By the time Sutta started speaking the Bhagavatam, they were all proper hearers to receive the Bhagavatam. They were candidates for pure devotional service. Rupa Goswami mentions the sages at Naimisharanya as a good example of Kanishtha Bhaktas, in the category of Jigyasu, inquisitive. But they became Kanishtha Bhaktas by hearing the other Puranas first, Mahabharata and other Puranas. And then they were candidates to begin pure devotional service by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. By hearing the Bhagavatam at Naimisharanya, they saved themselves, and they did whatever could be done to forestall the effects of Kali Yuga. Srimad Bhagavatam will not completely stop Kali Yuga, but it will slow it down for the time being. Nobody can stop it. Therefore, you can't blame Pariksha. It's not Pariksha's defeat that Kali Yuga got his foot in the door. It's inevitable. It's the plan of the Lord. History has to play out. Okay. The defeat of Kali?
The holy names. As long as the Hare Kirtan is sung, Kali cannot
Okay, but as soon as it stops, then he comes back. He's not destroyed. He's hiding. He goes into hiding. And he hasn't yet. He's still around. This dissemination of Harinam and Srimad Bhagavatam has to go on. Otherwise Kali is not going to retreat. He's still going strongly. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, well, that's the prediction. That will happen. It's really just a question of whether we get to participate in that victory or not. Krishna will be victorious. Prabhupada and the other pure devotees will be victorious. But we have the opportunity to join in that victory. Just like Arjuna was told, I've already killed all these soldiers, but I want you to be my instrument and get the credit for it. It's going to happen. Arjuna, if you run away, you know, everything's going to happen as predestined, but then you won't be able to participate. So it's just a question of whether we get to join in on the victory of the Sankirtan movement or not. Okay. Anyway, we tried to, over these 2 weeks, get a glimpse of Uddhava's personality. We didn't try to make a scientific, psychological study of him, you know, a very deep analysis. Maybe someone else can do that. Anyway, the only real access we have to understanding these great personalities who aren't on our level at all. They're a whole different category of personality. So we can't understand them in our own terms. We cannot understand them by speculation or by material analysis. It's only by the revelation given to us by Srimad Bhagavatam and other devotional scriptures and the instructions of pure devotees that we're able to understand these people at all. But if we can understand them, then we can approach Krishna. Now, to understand what this is Bhagavatam, the science of Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is full of stories, of narrations of Krishna's devotees. By understanding Krishna's devotees, we can gradually learn how to understand Krishna. That was the purpose of having this course. So, I'd like to thank everybody for their patience.
Thank you for your
Okay.